Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on today? My guest is Brian Cook from so many different bands, but he's recently just started a new side project called Torment and Glory, also with Russian Circles, going to be doing a reunion for These Arms Are Snakes, Sumac, X-Botch, Roy. What other bands, man? There's got to be at least two others.
I mean, that people know of or that I want to talk about, probably.
Okay, that's about it then. Okay.
A lot of fill-in work. You know, I've done some traveling around and filling in with Mammifer, and I played bass on one album by Mouth of the Architect. Those are just like part-time, helping friends out kind of deals. Not things that I was creatively involved with.
The axe for hire kind of thing.
Yeah.
So just announced today, Russian Circles will be opening for System of a Down and Faith No More on a short tour. Congratulations.
Yeah, weird.
Would it be safe to say Russian Circles is the first arena post-rock band?
I mean, who knows? I don't know. Super, super weird. I don't know how it happened, but yeah, I'm excited to do it. I've never played an arena before, and I have no idea how any of that stuff works. So I feel like I'm 18 and playing my first club show again.
Yeah.
How does it work? Like, what time do you show up? Like, is everyone going to be mean to me? Like, how does this work?
I think catering will be pretty nice, I bet.
Hopefully, yeah. We'll see.
I remember seeing you at the Paramount with Mastodon, and that was a really cool show. So that was, I mean, a pretty big venue, but this is just way bigger. So yeah. Pretty awesome.
Who knew? I guess I had no idea of the size of System of a Down, but cool. All right. I'm happy to be along for the ride. So.
So you just premiered first song from Torment and Glory, which is from what I understand your solo project. Is that something that you wrote all the music for yourself, or is it a collaboration?
No, it was all just me. It was a bunch of songs that, you know, living in apartments and all that, you know, I've never had like a half stack or a 8-10 in my apartment, you know, for jamming. So it's like, if I'm at home hanging out, it's always just an acoustic guitar, cause that doesn't aggravate the neighbors. And then after enough time, it's like you wind up with all these like weird little song fragments. And you know, when COVID came around, it was like, oh, I should probably just do something. So, yeah. You know, it took 10 years worth of little song fragments and made a record. And I was gonna do like a band camp only thing, maybe make some cassettes, but, I handed it off to my friend Ben Chisholm, who plays with Chelsea Wolfe, and he does a lot of production work and stuff. And I was just like, can you help me mix this? I don't really know how to mix. And then he kind of just took it to another level. And after he was done with it, he was like, I think this deserves more than like 50 cassette tapes. Like, maybe you should actually like try to do something proper with it. And so ran it by the folks at Sergeant House, and they were into it. So now it's coming out on vinyl and all that business. So
a proper release. You think you'll ever play this stuff live?
It wasn't a part of the plan. The idea of playing it live is really stressful because there's a lot going on those songs, and I'd recruit a bunch of people to help out with it. And I don't know. It's a different stylistic thing that I'm sort of used to doing in the live setting. So short answer, probably not.
Okay.
But you know, if
who knows?
It seems like something that people really like, and that there's a opportunity to present it in a cool way, then maybe. I don't know.
All right. Right on, man. Well, the album is called We Left a Note with an Apology. It's coming out August 27th on Sergeant House. You can pre-order a copy now. You're also gearing up for the reunion of the band called These Arms Are Snakes. And August 27th at Numos. If you want a ticket, too bad. There, you're going to have to scalp it or something. The show is quickly sold out. Is that right? Totally sold out?
The first night sold out pretty quick.
Okay.
It sold out in a day or two. And then we added a second show. And I think there are still a few tickets left for that. But there was a low ticket warning issued from Pneumo. So
it's 27th and 28th then. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I know the first one's a 27th. So I would assume then the 28th after that. So.
Yeah.
How long had the reunion been in talks? Like, was this something that came up during COVID, or had there been discussion about doing it even before the lockdown and whatnot?
Well, it was a thing where These Arms of Snakes ended like pretty abruptly, and kind of unceremoniously, just because we were basically just getting like offers to do things that financially we just couldn't take on doing. And we were just kind of like in a tumultuous time in our lives.
Sure.
I think it was kind of messy. And I was at a point where I was like, I can't commit to doing any more of this. And, you know, like I want everyone to have closure, but you know, I can't like keep making records and buying new vans to run into the ground to go on tour and all that. It was just like, it was kind of past that point. And, you know, at that point, everyone was like, well, if we're not going to like keep moving forward, like, let's just like end it now. So instead of there being, you know, kind of like a farewell show or a farewell tour or any of that stuff, it was just kind of like one day it was just done.
Mm-hmm. And
I think there was always the idea that we would do like some sort of show or shows once, so the dust had settled and everyone was kind of like, you know, everyone kind of cooled off and all that. But, you know, life got away from everyone. I moved to New York. Chris, our drummer, moved to El Paso or L.A. No, Spain. Chris moved all over the place. He's hard to pin down.
Sure.
He went to Portugal for a while. I don't know. He was all over the place. So, you know, it just kind of quickly became a thing where, you know, the idea of doing a farewell show or final show got just more and more complicated.
Yeah.
And, when COVID came around, I think Pneumo's was just kind of like looking to see if what they could get in terms of local bands. Yeah. It was kind of an interesting thing with COVID. I was sort of anticipating some of this where, you know, bands have to book out tours like months and months in advance, but no one knows when like the doors are going to be open to clubs again.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yeah, I feel like once things are up and running again, there's just going to be all these like offers just grab whoever's sort of available at the time. And, you know, our friends at Pneumo's were like, hey, this seems like an opportunity to see if Snakes want to do something. And, we're like, well, yeah, none of us have shit going on because everything's on hold. So, it finally, after, you know, 10 plus years, it was like, oh yeah, let's do that final show that we were always talking about, you know. But I guess it's a reunion show, even though it's really kind of just the final show that we'd always planned on doing.
Fair enough. I have to ask, are you familiar and kind of aware of like the rabid cult-like fan base of These Arms Are Snakes? Like there's like a very, very hardcore, like kind of rabid fan base of that band?
No.
Okay, well, now you're aware. So
there is. Okay, that's cool. I have no idea. I don't Google my name enough or something, or Google my own bands.
Yeah,
and I try.
You gotta do vanity tweet searches.
Yeah, and I'm always like scared to like dive into internet stuff like that, because like I don't need to see what people really think about me on the internet. That seems like bad news. So yeah,
well, I think people are stoked enough to buy tickets for the reunion two shows. And so it's again, the 27th, 28th at Pneumo's. Have you guys gotten together to actually like relearn these songs or play them? Have you guys gotten together?
Yeah. Yeah. We rented out a space. We've met up a few times. Seems to be going good. There's still some work to do, but
yeah.
You know, over the course of three practices, it went from, you know, that very first song being like, oh man, it's been a while. We're all tired. My fingers hurt.
Yep.
But now, but now it's, yeah, the, it's coming together.
Nice.
It's kind of, I don't know. There's like a new, at least for me, there's like a new appreciation for some of those old songs where it's like, oh, you know,
it's pretty good.
We're being in our 20s and like being just total messes of human beings. Like we wrote some like good stuff.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's fun to like revisit and be like, I know I wrote this, but I don't remember writing this. So like,
how many beers deep were you, you know, during that time? So
yeah, at any given time, probably at least a few. So
yeah. Okay. So on the topic of reunions, I have to ask, how many times in the past 20 years have you been seriously approached for a Botch reunion? How many times has that actually been like, cause there's like so many big metal festivals now, like Psycho Las Vegas and like big hardcore festivals. Has that ever, I'm assuming how many, that's why I'm asking how many times has it been, on the table?
Yeah, it gets brought up, a few times a year. There's usually a pretty, I don't know, whenever festival season comes around, there's some sort of inquiry about, you know,
like clockwork.
Yeah. Do you want to do the Decibel Hall of Fame thing? You know? And, yeah, it's nice to be asked, and it's super flattering. A lot of times it kind of comes up like people think it's the first time it's been offered. So that's always kind of funny. It's like, hey, I got this idea. Botch could reunite. And it's like, yeah, I know. Like it's been a few months. So I guess we're about due for another inquiry. So
yeah.
So it's nice to be asked. And there's been occasions where it's something that would be considered, like most notably with when Caleb from Caven passed away, and there was the benefit shows for him. You know, Botch was approached about doing those, and that was something we probably would have done if it hadn't been like right in the middle of both a Russian Circles tour and a Minus the Bear tour. So neither I or Dave could do it, but, you know, something like that was meaningful and sort of related to our community, you know, that held some appeal to us, but you know, it's a lot of work getting a band back together. Yeah. I think everyone assumes that it's like, oh, you wrote the songs, so you must remember them. It's like, no, I wrote those songs 20 plus years ago, and I had a lot more energy back then. And, you know, it's just even getting sort of the chemistry and dynamics and just like that intuition that bands sort of develop when they play together for a long time, and they can kind of anticipate each other's moves is like something that, you don't get that from one or two practices. You have to really work at that a lot. And yeah, it's a lot of work. And when you're already having like multiple active music projects take you away from home all the time, like someone being like, oh, like Botch could reunite, that'd be cool. It's like, yeah, that's, would be cool, but man, that's so much work.
Those weren't, you know, chugga chugga Hatebreed songs. Like that was some pretty intense stuff going on in those songs, and so to bring all of those elements back, that's the thing, is you wouldn't want to half-ass it, because if this is going to be there's going to be people flying in, you know, it'd be crazy. But at this point, you know, every band is reunited, so it's almost like for stubbornness sake, you got to be the band that just doesn't. Like, there's like Minor Threat and Botch are the bands that, no, like, nope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's maybe part of my hang up too, is that, you know, I've held people like Ian MacKay and you know, to a certain extent, Jellaby Afra on such a high level. And those dudes were always so adamantly opposed to reunions that it's kind of like, in my head, it's like, yeah, you don't cash in and do a reunion. Like, so, you know, the idea of like reuniting and doing it just to like make a quick buck just seems super gross and tacky. But, you know, if it was for something that was meaningful, you know, like it felt like it was paying tribute to something, you know, that's a different story. So I've learned not to say never to that, but it's like the circumstances would have to be very specific. And, I honestly can't imagine what those circumstances would be at this point in time. And man, like it would freak me the fuck out, because it's like to put on like a bot show the way we used to put on bot shows. It's like, I'm 44 years old and like, I don't know if my body could handle like throwing itself around on stage all night and all that stuff. It's like, I bruise too easily these days. So I don't know.
All right. Brian, I got an idea, man, and this is how we're going to cash in, okay? It's going to be called Botch Fest. It's going to be Botch headlining with every band that ever ripped off Botch blatantly.
Oh, cool.
As openers. And then it'll just be the headliners is the actual band that everyone ripped off. It'll be Botch Fest. What do you think, dude?
Oh, man. It's so
Let's
great.
Make it happen.
Can't wait to compete with all the young bucks that actually have energy.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll probably pass on that one.
Okay. Okay. All right. Cool. Just floating it out there. So, I'm curious. So as far as like going back in time, when we're talking about, you know, your first band and whatnot, was that your first band? Was Botch your first band?
For the most part, like I played in bands, like I played in a punk band, in Hawaii when,
oh, okay.
My parents were military. So we were stationed out in Hawaii when I first started playing music, and so I had like a punk band out there, but you know, we never like put out records or anything like that, and it was just, you know, 14 year olds in a garage and doing that whole thing. So
do you remember what band or what music really kind of inspired you to like pick up an instrument? What was like kind of like that light bulb moment? If was there an album or an artist?
I don't know if there was anything specifically, but you know, I was like really into skating, and I was really into like the whole culture that kind of went along with that. So, yeah. You know, I was reading Thrasher magazine, and
yeah.
You know, I was always interested in music, but music always seemed like it was something that was made by people that were really talented and really attractive, and you know, everything was really polished. And you know, about the time I got into skateboarding, I was also kind of discovering stuff like, you know, like REM and the Pixies and mm-hmm. Faith No More and things like that, where I was like, oh, this is like, there's like different ways of this sort of happening. And then with sort of the world of skateboarding and Thrasher kind of coming together and seeing, you know, articles on like Bad Religion and, mm-hmm. you know, again, like there's like a Jello Biafra interview and like 1990 or 1991 that I remember reading, and it was just like, whoa, this dude has like writes songs about things. Like,
yeah. Right.
That's crazy. And, you know, just like, I remember there was like some line in the interview where he was like, you know, like no one cared about Dead Kennedys in 1982, but in 1990, like we sell more records than Journey, you know, just because like the legacy of Dead Kennedys, like, is such like a powerful thing. And, yeah. And I remember reading that and just being like, oh, that's awesome that like these bands who don't even like put their pictures on the album covers, like I had no idea what Dead Kennedys looked like. They were just like this weird mysterious band, and the fact that they could make this really ugly, really raw music, and it somehow like outlived its actual lifetime, and you know, it still generated interest in, you know, 14-year-old teenagers reading Thrasher magazine. You know, to me, that was like really inspiring and interesting. So on some level, the Dead Kennedys are probably a big part of it. But you know, right around that same time, I saw Fugazi at the University of Hawaii, and that was like my first show. And that was just, you know, like after that, it was like, okay, this is like the greatest thing I've ever witnessed as a kid. So I need to do that. And, you know, think like getting into like the whole SST catalog, you know, it was like the early 90s. So pre-internet. So I didn't know like which bands were cool and which ones weren't. Yeah. I know Black Flag's cool. And I know like Sonic Youth is cool and Bad Brains are cool. But, you know, I latched onto Minutemen and Firehose in a big way. And I think that was so bass centric and bass driven and bass guided that, you know, that was like a big inspiration as well. So it's kind of like a combination of those things, I guess.
I was gonna mention, you were saying, you know, Firehose and Minutemen and Fugazi, all those bands are like, the bass is not like the accompaniment to the guitar. It is very much a very bass, you know, centric band. And was that a a big inspiration for you to kind of pursue bass?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, like I was saying earlier, you know, for me, music always seemed like it required so much talent, you know, yeah. when I was younger, and like punk was sort of the first thing that I realized. It's like, oh, this is all actually doable. Like,
yeah.
you know, you can, like, anyone could do this if they just dedicate enough time to it. So, but the bass still seemed like the easiest thing. So I latched onto that, and then just kind of became a matter of like, what bass is actually audible
mm-hmm.
on a record. And, you know, it's like you mentioned, like Joe Lally, like you can always hear a Joe Lally bass line on Infugazi. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some Claus Fluoride bass lines throughout the Dead Kennedys catalog that really pop out. So I learned all those, and, you know, again, Minutemen, Firehose. I got really into No Means No, because that was another one where it's like No Means No sounds like the bass player writes everything.
Yeah.
So I latched onto that in a big way. And, you know, I think I continued into my adult life always having an affinity for bands where, you know, every instrument's kind of doing its own thing, still working together to one, you know, composition and one vision, yeah. but like you could isolate any one instrument in the mix and be impressed by what's happening, or
yeah.
that's a cool, you know, drum part or bass line. So, you know, whether that means something like Unwound or awesome. Or Rush, you know, it was just yeah. like, it's like everyone's a shredder and everyone's doing something interesting. Like that's still what usually lures me into a band.
So, before we did the interview we were talking about some black metal and death metal bands because you're wearing an Ascendancy t-shirt. I still haven't listened to them, but you were telling me to check them out and whatnot. So we're talking a lot about like the punk and the post-hardcore that you were getting into as a kid. When did your interest in metal start to come in?
That was actually, it was later. Like, I feel like so many of my friends I talk to, it's like Metallica first, like, yeah. you know, it was like Master of Puppets, you know, Justice, like that was like their entry point. And then like from there, it's like, you know, they maybe discover, you know, some of the harder edged punk stuff out there, but it was really like metal was the entry point. But I was like the opposite, where for me, it was like the pre grunge alternative music, you know, like, yep. late 80s, early 90s stuff. And then like from there, it turned into like the punk bands. And then, you know, I didn't mind Slayer. I didn't mind Metallica. Like I liked Pantera, because Pantera to me always had like a weird hardcore angle, even if it was just that Phil Anselmo had a shaved head, but I was always like, it's kind of like Black Flag, you know,
yeah.
like, the sort of self-flagellating, like angry tattooed guy strutting around on stage, you know. But metal, it wasn't really until like my interest in hardcore kind of led into things that were basically metal bands, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like hearing Rorschach or,
yeah,
you know, things along those lines, where it was like, oh, like this has now opened my mind up to, you know, double kick drum and tremolo picking and all that stuff, and like super indecipherable caustic vocals. And,
yeah.
And, you know, then there was stuff like Chaos AD. Chaos AD was like one of the first metal albums I like got super obsessed with, because it's kind of just like a chuggy mid-tempo hardcore record.
Yeah. yeah.
So it's like political, you know, it's like moshy, you know, heavy, like, yeah, so that's still like a favorite of mine, just for nostalgia purposes. But, you know, and then from there, it's kind of things opened up where it's like, oh, Morbid Angel, and oh, At the Gates, and, you know, Samael, and like, you know, like, I don't know, I can't even think of what the path exactly looked like. But next thing you know, it's, you know, listening to just the most abrasive caustic metal stuff out there. How did I wind up here? You know, I didn't even think I was enough worth it, but now it's like 90% of what I listen to. So,
well, you know, I was actually shown Botch as if you were a metal band. I mean, I guess people could kind of consider. But my friend Josh showed it to me because he's like a metalhead, and he's like, dude, check this out. And so I didn't really know about hardcore. I just was like, this is a sick ass different sounding metal band. And then I found out about kind of like Northwest hardcore music. And I mean, that band kind of, I guess, bridges the gap between both genres, kind of all a bunch of stuff. But yeah, so were you into metal? Did you get into metal around that time with playing with them, or was it even before then?
No, it was that time. Cause when we started playing, by the time Botch was together, I was listening to Neurosis and I was listening to like Helmet, and, but I wasn't super like immersed into it. So it was like, I had friends prior to that were super into Cannibal Corpse and DSI and all like the early 90s death metal stuff. But like, with the exception of like, again, like Sepultura, Napalm Death, like stuff that felt like it had like a little bit of a punk edge, like more like straight up metal stuff just didn't really do it for me. But, playing in Botch, Dave Knudsen, the guitar player, was definitely a metalhead. He was definitely one of the Metallica guys. So, hanging out with him, all of a sudden, I was listening to Morbid Angel and A New Light, where it's like, oh, this guy likes Morbid Angel. So maybe I should actually give, World of a chance. And hey, winds up I liked World of, so maybe I like the whole Covenant album. I don't know, And from there, it kind of like, I think we both kind of informed each other where, I was forcing a little bit more of the hardcore stuff, and he was educating me on some of the more heavy stuff. So,
cool. Well, we're talking about, some old school stuff. So I'm curious, and this is a random question. If you can think back, and even if it's embarrassing, what's your first band t-shirt you ever owned? Mine was a No Doubt t-shirt from Target, so I can't, claim to be some like hardcore metal, elitist here. What was your first band t-shirt?
I don't remember the first. I remember being really disappointed going to that first Fugazi concert and being like, oh man, they don't have shirts.
Perfect. Yeah.
So, the next show I went to was Dinosaur Jr. So I definitely got a Dinosaur Jr. shirt and did like the whole like wearing the Dinosaur Jr. shirt at the concert, and it just got destroyed in the pit. So I learned my lesson where you don't like wear the shirt the second you buy it. But I don't know if that Dinosaur Jr. one was the first one, or I ordered like a few shirts from, again, Out of Thrasher, from like the Sessions catalog. So I had like Primus Frizzle Fry shirt, and there's a Bad Religion shirt that I still have downstairs that's like, one wash cycle away from falling apart.
Nice.
Had a Dead Kennedys one, of course.
Yeah.
That one's long since been lost, but it's probably one of those. I don't know.
Nice. Not
specifically.
Okay. So do you remember what your first CD or vinyl or tape, what was the first actual like physical piece of music that you purchased with your own money?
Oh, I remember all of them.
Okay.
Well, it's easy because my first tape and my first CD were the same. So I bought the tape first, and then when CDs became a thing, I had to do the upgrade. And that's Chicago 17.
Okay.
A huge soft rock ballad fan when I was like 9. So I loved Chicago 16 through 18, like all those like 80s, power ballad hits. I loved them.
Do you still love them?
I still, maybe I don't own any of those records, but like, they pop up on a playlist. Sure.
You're singing along.
Yeah. I karaoke of them. So
nice.
Like Peter Cetera was wearing a Bauhaus shirt in the You're the Inspiration video. So he has like a little bit of like, a little cred.
Yeah.
My first LP was Shadowy Man on a Shadowy Planet, which was a Canadian surf rock band, mostly known because they did the Kids in the Hall theme song.
Oh, great. Okay.
I had the record with that on it. And I still have that. That's still like probably 6 feet away from me at this point.
Nice. Awesome, man. Okay. So, you know, I don't want to take up all your time today. I do appreciate you doing this interview and, but I do have a couple more questions. So, you're a Seattle music head. You've been in, you know, we were talking about Botch and then these arms are snakes and now you're still living in Seattle. What are, and this is, we're not trying to make any enemies here. So we're not trying to exclude anyone, but we all know the big four of American thrash metal, Megadeth, Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax. In your opinion, your personal big four of Seattle music.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Just across the board, like,
yeah, all time across the board, just your favorites.
Okay. And they're just my favorites. I'm not having
just your favorites.
To claim, yep, even the greatest.
No, just your favorites. Yep.
Okay.
The Brian Cook big four.
All right. Are we talking Seattle?
It could be Northwest.
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 Including Canada?
Vancouver.
Vancouver. Okay. Well, first off, I would say Undertow's At Both Ends.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't have to be a specific album, just a band.
Oh, just a band? Okay. Well, yep. Undertow.
Yep.
Undertow for sure. Just because that was like such a huge entry point into like modern hardcore for me. Like prior to discovering Undertow, it was like, you know, I liked hardcore, but it was like, I didn't realize outside of like Fugazi that there was like contemporary hardcore. Like I only knew about bands that had already broken up. So it's like Minor Threat, Black Flag, Gorilla Biscuits, Youth of Today, and like Slapshot. Yep. Slapshot was probably still a band actually, but you know, in my mind,
but they're on the other side of the country.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all like, you know, it was like, it was a phenomenon of the past. So like seeing Undertow was just like, oh, this is still happening. Like this is amazing. So, and they were just a great band. So, hugely inspirational, huge impact on Botch. Can't understate their importance to us. So that was an easy number one. Now it gets tough. So, I mean, I probably have to say No Means No.
Okay.
They're Vancouver or Victoria. Not sure which one, but you know, that was such a huge part of like me embracing the bass guitar and learning the bass guitar. So, and a band that I loved when I was 14 and a band that I still listen to regularly today. So I have to go with that. Man, these other ones are tough because it's like, part of me wants to just like pull out like Behead the Prophet and Deathwish Kids, just because as like live entities, like those bands were like no band can do anything on stage at this point that will impress me, because I saw Deathwish Kids and Behead the Prophet. Like both those bands were just so unhinged and bonkers and just like, you know, 15-minute sets, but they would just destroy everything. But like the vibe was always super positive. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't, you know, some angry, like dudes, like tearing a place down. It was, you know, Deathwish Kids. It was Andrea Zolo, like, you know,
from Pretty Girls Make Graves. Yep.
Yeah. Like, you know, just like shrieking while the rest of the thing was just like swinging guitars above their heads. And, you know, Behead the Prophet, it was, you know, you had Joshua, who was just this flamboyant gay man, you know, just like screaming his head off, climbing on the audience. You know, they had this 60-year-old fiddle player who was just like making feedback and noise while the rest of the band was just doing like crazy spastic punk stuff. You know, it's like when At the Drive-In blew up and everyone was getting like freaking out over it, it's like, You guys didn't see Behead the Prophet. Like,
right.
They were so much crazier. Like you have no idea. Like you didn't see Deathwish Kids. That was crazy. So
I never got to see Behead the Prophet, but I specifically remember reading in either The Stranger or The Rocket, the ads for like the Paradox. And it was like, I remember two band names, Behead the Prophet, No Lord Shall Live, and Tight Bros from Way Back When.
Man, such a great band. Oh, and see that
just those two band names really stuck out.
Tight Bros were so great. And then it's like, man, how do you not like bring Carp into the equation, because yeah. Carp is such a great band.
Yep.
And then there's Unwound. So how do you not bring Unwound into the mix? So, dude, I don't know.
We can do six. There you go. There's your big six.
Okay. All right.
Right on. Okay. So I got to ask, as a quote unquote journalist, is there any material by Russian Circles or Sumac that we can tease?
Like coming up?
Yeah.
Well, Russian Circles are heading into the studio in September.
Killer.
So about a month. Nice. We're going to Electrical Audio in Chicago.
Ooh.
With Kurt Ballou. And we're going to do drums and bass there. And then we're going to do guitars with Kurt Ballou. At,
yeah. So this is Kurt Ballou working at Steve Albini's.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a cool like collaboration mashup there.
Yeah. And that's actually what we did on the last record on Blood Year. And it was kind of just like, oh yeah, this is the way we should just always do it.
That's so cool. Yeah.
You know, it's like you get like the Electrical Audio drum sounds, which are just kind of like, perfect. You don't have to do anything except just set up the drums and put microphones in front of them and they sound great. And then you have Kurt with his just like extensive guitar expertise. Yeah. And you know, Kurt just kind of gets us and what we want.
Yeah.
You know, knows like the right balance between like making something sound like tight and locked in, but still sounding like it's played by human beings. And
yeah.
You know, raw and kind of nasty. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're excited about that. So that's
Kurt Ballou playing with Steve Albini's toys. That's like the ultimate, man. That's badass.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're stoked on that. And then, that will probably be out sometime next year, you mm-hmm. know, with the way vinyl delays are going now, it's kind of like,
who knows?
Yeah, exactly. It's like
a full year wait or something, right?
Dude, it's so bad. I mean, I think we're already like in the queue for production, so
okay, cool.
It's not going to be a full year, but who knows? You know?
Yeah.
Sumac is kind of in a holding pattern because mm-hmm. Nick's Canadian and the border, COVID, you know, yep. It's kind of made it impossible unless we want to like all fly somewhere to meet up and do stuff. So, so we haven't all been in the same room in like 2 years or something.
Yeah.
But we do have a new collaboration record with KG Hino. This will be like our third collaboration with him. And that I think will be out next year.
Cool.
But I don't really know anything more about that. I know it's mixed and it's mastered, but I'm not sure who's putting it in or when, but for people that like the entirely improvised version of Sumac, you know, they'll have that at some point next year. So
whenever albums get pressed, who knows when.
I know like the deal is getting like our first full length album is getting repressed right now.
Nice.
Like, supposed to be out in like 6 to 8 months. It's just like, all right, see when it shows up.
I remember there was a band I talked to recently for Loud and Local, and I was asking them like, so do you think you guys are actually going to have records for your record release? And they're like, don't ask us that question, dude.
Yeah, it's so grim. It's like such a bummer too, because it's like,
when CDs make the return, your favorite format.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's they kind of got to, right?
Because yeah.
Like vinyl's like so expensive and takes so long to manufacture, and I love records. I mean, like I mean my whole wall is like records, so
oh yeah,
you know, like
nice.
I'm committed to the vinyl, but it's like, man, it sucks to pay like $35 for like a single LP
and, yeah,
you know,
wait a year for a pre-order.
Yeah, dude.
Seriously. Thanks, Record Store Day.
I know. It's like all those Fleetwood Mac Rumors copies that have to be repressed. It's like,
yep.
God damn.
All those records at Target got to be made somewhere.
Yeah. Like, Well, you know, people need their Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. So
exactly. All right, man. So we're looking forward to Torment and Glory, the album. But my last question for you, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar.
Okay.
And show it if you can.
Ooh. All right. Trying to decide between two. Well, let's see. Let's see if this one's. You know what? I'm not going to show you my belly button limb. You don't get to see my surgery scar. All right.
Okay. All right.
Where is it? It might not be super visible, but I have like a third eyebrow, like an angry scar here from a skateboarding accident that was like the least cool accident ever. It was literally like ollieing up a curb, like hitting a crack.
Yeah.
You know, kind of stumbling off the board. Board goes rolling off. And like, I was just like, oh, I'll just go run and jump on my board, you know, skate away.
Yeah.
Like misjudged how fast the board was rolling away from me and like leapt and just landed on the tail and it flipped up.
Oh.
And like hit me in the head. And, you know, like saw stars, like things went fuzzy for a second. And I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm just going to walk home. And then it was just like raining blood down the front of my face because it was a head wound. And, you know, it was like 7 stitches later. I had this gnarly, angry scar. But
damn,
it was, I remember just being super bummed because I had my crisp white Vision streetwear shirt.
Oh, no.
Classic Vision streetwear shirt. Yeah. And it was just like blood. And, you know, it's like, that might be kind of cool, but then it just washes into like a gross brown and that's not cool. So I had to like throw away this like Vision streetwear shirt that I'd saved up for. And the only saving grace is that there was blood all over my skateboard. So I thought that looked cool.
That was hardcore. Yeah. Was it a Vision Psycho stick?
No, it was not. I don't actually remember what it was, but it was not a Vision board. But it was bloody and gross. Yeah.
Hardcore.
Yeah. It was a biohazard for sure. But yeah,
that's like the cool thing I got.
I don't have a lot of injuries. I don't have any compound fractures or anything like that to flaunt. Unfortunately,
the fracture is in your heart because you had to throw away that Vision T-shirt. So, unfortunately, but anyways, so Brian, thank you so much for taking the time again. I got to plug it. The new album is called We Left a Note with an Apology. And, you're going to be playing I don't even have to say, you know, go order these Faith No More System of a Down tickets because it's probably going to sell out and you're not even going to have to worry about it because those bands don't play together very often. And you guys just get to be the cream topping on that sounds weird. You guys get to be the little cherry on top.
Yeah.
And like I said, the first arena post rock band.
I'm sure there's going to be like 100 people there when we play and it's going to be like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but I don't care. I'm excited for it. So
like you said, like, you know, one of the first bands you really got into with Faith No More, you know, and stuff. So
yeah,
now you get to live that fantasy, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Kevin.